month's Real Estate Roundtable. Super excited this month as it is our last show of the year. So happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, happy holidays to everyone post Thanksgiving. I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving. This is the Real Estate Roundtable. I'm your host, Andre Senni. Joining me today, Professor Darren Hayes, Saul Klein, Rebecca Carlson, our multimedia wizard, Reagan Mendoza, all back here again to talk all things real estate and lessons learned for 2021. Welcome back, everyone. Nice to see you.
Good to be back.
Good to see you.
Good to be back. Before the show, we started to talk about Thanksgiving and how much weight I gained. No, the appetites, supply and demand, really. Before we jump back over there, go around into the introduction portion. What's going on in your side of the business, who you are, where you come from, then we'll jump right into the show. Saul, would you kick us off?
Yeah, Saul Klein. And, this past month hasn't been that much different than months before that, at least in the things that I've been looking at. The car wash business kind of slowed up a little bit, but that's normal for us. So not as many people out washing their car during the month of November as we saw over the summer months. But in our market, our real estate, our residential real estate market in San Diego is still tight, still lack of inventory. And I still get lots of notices in the mail for loans on the house. So I know there's lots of people trying to get money out into the economy.
Love it. Love it. Becca, how are things in Chicago?
Things are getting colder. Today is actually super nice. It's maybe even close to 60 degrees, but we've already had some of those low 20s days, which make me think that it's going to be a very long winter here in Chicago. And as far as the business goes in the market continues to thrive and to be pretty exciting. It's interesting. I've been talking to a lot of investors over the past couple of weeks and identifying and understanding their plans for the coming year. And one piece that has made it for some more activity for me on the marketing side is that a number of my colleagues and clients are going to the ICSE conference that starts on Sunday in Las Vegas. So there have been some last minute projects to wrap up, some neat materials, website things for various clients that has spurred some activity. And it'll be interesting next year as more and more of those in-person conferences show up, to see how that changes kind of our annualized activity, because the past couple of years have been very quiet from that standpoint.
So that reminds me, you just came off actually attending the NAO conference in your
neighborhood. I forgot all about that. So this was the first conference that NAR had done in a couple of years. It was very interesting. It was very well done. When you had to have your shot card. First thing you did, you got in line and you got a thing to wrap around your wrist that showed that you were validated, and then you could get in the line. And when you registered, you indicated whether or not you were receptive to a hug or a handshake or a fist bump or 6 foot. And then your badge was appropriately labeled, so people who you saw would see. I thought it was very well done.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. I didn't see the result. Anybody with formal results, I thought it was pretty successful for the first time back, and that NAR did a great job. There's a lot of value, and for the people that were there, it was fun seeing people. It was fun seeing how you recognize people even though they had a mask on.
That's fantastic. That color code or badges, that's interesting. I mean, and Darren Hayes, welcome back after you were away at a cyber conference. I assume they already knew everything about you when you got to the door, vaccination status and everything else. So people just...
Oh, I was actually out of the country. I was over visiting family in Ireland, but I was also had some meetings, business meetings and that kind of thing. So it was good to get away. Doing all these tests associated with travel was interesting, but it's worth all the hassle to get out and to be traveling a lot more, as you can imagine, and especially over Thanksgiving. So it was, apologies that I wasn't here, but it's great to be back.
Well, I think that's the overriding theme. Most of us are back to business almost as usual. Is that a fair statement, with the exception of the Omni variant, which is a concern but not a devastation. Everybody's kind of prepared for it, and we're back to business. Saul, in California, what do you think on that coming off?
I'd like to think that way. I'm not really sure, you know, like anything. And there's a lot of other things that are taking place right now that I can think about them in a negative way. So I'm not sure that everybody's back. I'm sure everybody's doing everything they can to try to be back. And I think there's still some issues or employment issues. There's still, right, there's all these lingering effects. And, you know, so it's kind of like we had these new necessities that were thrown upon us. And then these new necessities then required new behaviors. And so people took on new behaviors, and it's like over the last 2 years. And so the question is, which of those new behaviors then actually became habits, and which will then go back to being the way that they were? And so now we have an opportunity to kind of observe some of these things. One thing that seems obvious to me is people like to get back together in big groups of people, and that nobody's afraid to get on an airplane and get in the line and go travel anywhere, because every picture I see is it's all full. And that there are concerts. And so even though the NAR event was, I think, half of what it normally is, and they probably restricted it intentionally, that from that aspect, if you look around you, it looks like the, you know, the things that get publicity are people are out there and people are doing things. And you know, but I went to NAR. One of the reasons I was there, because I live in San Diego and the event was in San Diego. Right.
All right. And then, The you are right. Everything I see, and let's for the holidays quickly. Rockefeller Center, the concert, the tree lighting. I mean, it was just a killer look. I didn't go. I'm right here, but it was a killer look again on TV. And I saw the who's who of celebrities all packed together having a great time. And I haven't heard bad things, which is fantastic.
Professional athletics. I don't watch any type of athletics anymore, but I would venture to say I bet the stadiums are full. Are they? They're putting people in, people going to stadiums, doing tailgate. Is that stuff happening now?
I believe that MLB is locked out and there's some lockouts, but not because of COVID, just contractual issues. I don't follow sports as much as others, personally.
But I think that's an indicator of people who, right, coming back. That would be a telltale to me, would be watching those types of things, the attendance at those types of things.
Although when a team like the New York Islanders get, you know, COVID infections, then it's the team that are responsible for the game not happening. So we're seeing some of that now.
Right. And I think, speaking of NAR, ICSC, both organizations did a tremendous job of stopping shows. They're very responsible in their reactions and everything they've done. So if they have the confidence to put back on show, we should have the confidence to go, being cautiously invested in what we're doing. I'm curious to see how ICSC handles it, because that is a madhouse. Darren, I don't know if you've been, but it is truly a madhouse. Almost as good as NAR, NAR, in the sense of just the pure amount of people moving back and forth in all space. Although ICSC spreads people out a bit more. With a insane sticker price for booths, I assume has come down, given us. What's happened to pricing in your different markets? I mean, just marketing and everything else. I'm seeing 50% increase on just gas alone. My real estate, people are struggling. Deliveries are struggling. Chris Abel couldn't join us today, but construction delays. What are your thoughts there coming in this new year? What should we be prepared for based on what we know? So Saul to start.
Well, I think here in California, gasoline's like where I live is like $5 a gallon, and so there's an issue, big issue, I think, with energy and a lot of money getting dumped into the economy. I think, you know, just from where my experience in watching this thing since the '80s is that when you pump a lot of money in, you're going to have inflation, and we're seeing the results of that. We've been talking about it for a while. I think people need to be prepared for that. People need to be prepared for more taxation. They also need to be prepared to take advantage, and this has always been the case, take advantage of what the government has to to offer. You know, when the government says if you build a new residential property, we'll give you a certain tax advantage, people built new residential properties. And when the government said if you build new commercial type of properties, we'll give you a certain tax advantage, then people did that. So people do that, and that's great. And we're going to see a lot of money, like it or not. You're going to see lots of money and lots of different programs that'll give opportunity for local governments to allocate funding to different areas. And so I would be on the, if I were still listing and selling and playing around investing in real estate, I would be looking for those areas, those types of properties. I mean, something as simple in California as taking every residential lot and saying, every single family lot and saying, now you can put two properties on, you can put two buildings. So they pass this thing, everybody can, now it's not going to happen overnight, but everybody can put two buildings. And so what's going to happen? Are we going to see increases in density? Just lots of changes. But the system is set up so that if you follow the rules, you'll benefit from it. And so I say, look at all of the opportunities that are going to come your way. And as you always have done, look for ways to protect your assets, look for ways to be in assets or the appropriate assets for where you are in life, be in the types of assets that have the right, match your tolerance for risk, the understanding the economy and inflation and growth assets. And so anticipate that growth assets would be a good thing for most people to own next year, and that's real estate, right? And play by the rules. Watch what's happening in your area. Pay attention to where's the money going, and you know, is it going to my neighborhood? And if it's not going to my neighborhood, how can I do it? How can I participate on the planning committee? How can I participate in the business improvement district? What types of things can I do as a volunteer to help bring that money to my neighborhood? Because I know if people spend money in the neighborhood, it's going to increase the value, right? That whole story, and that we call that revitalization. And we're going to see lots of money allocated to revitalization. And so
you see plenty of runway out there, both in market as is with the scarcity of assets. Values are going to hold. Everything's going to hold. Inflation being what it is, but rates will up maybe early next year based on your side of the fence.
Yeah. And even, I don't know where rates are going. There's a lot of variables involved in rates, right? But realize, you know, from the smallest property, take in California, where you can take a single and now you can put a second lot on it. And people say, well, a lot of people say, well, we don't like that. It increases the density in the neighborhood. And I own property in the neighborhood. As a matter of fact, I own a rental across the street. And I say, you know, when they said you could build two units there, you just increased the value of my rental property.
Right. Can you double your rental units?
I live across the street. I don't mind. I like the idea of, right? So a lot of these things have two sides, right? And you're going to get a lot of pushback, and we still have a house. This is a big problem. We got housing affordability issues. We have to solve these issues. We do have a government, an administration that's looking to use the full force. And we talked about this of administrative law to accomplish its ends. And part of this is in the distribution of this money to certain neighborhoods. So don't fight it, figure out where it's going and learn how it can help you and help your clients and help with affordable housing. And there's lots of big policy changes coming our way next year. And then another big point, and then I'll shut up. And that is that the speed of technological change, people think it's changing. We've been talking about change for a long time. But some of us who've been around for a long time, we can actually see the acceleration that's taking place. It's kind of like compound interest. You know, you don't see a lot of compound interest from the first 2 or 3 years, and then it goes to 5 years, and then it goes to 10 years, and you really want to took it out to 20 years, and then you take it out to 30 years, but you don't ever dare go to 40 years, because if you take it out to 40 years, that compound interest, right, it just shoots right up. And so I've been watching technology in the real estate space for 40 years. And I've been watching the change. And so the pace of change, and we know we say this all the time, but I think the pace of change will come crunching down on top of people next year, over the next 2 years, but over next year in particular. And when that happens, look for the opportunities. But the technology is just, it's amazing in the efficiencies and the scale that's taking place right now. We want to talk about blockchain and all that. Just a lot of change taking place.
Well, Darren, you weren't here last time, and we'll talk about that metaverse and real estate and digital. I'm sure we're going to come around to that in a moment. But I think the most affected by rapid change would be market, Rebecca, your side of the fence. It's been a long year. What has happened? What do you see for 2021? What could we be doing to get ready for 2022? Sal said it well, find right opportunity and exploit it, or at least leverage it in the right market, in the right area, which as real estate professionals, that's our job. As Darren's profession, we have to block exploits. We're going to come to that in just a moment. Becca? Oh, and so we get a comment in about your car wash, so we want to know if you can double the throughput because of this law change. It's this car wash famous.
I have an answer to that, but we'll do that at the end.
So marketing is built very much on fundamentals, and those fundamentals haven't changed, but the way we apply those fundamentals has changed. And there is a real situation right now that people aren't having the time to understand, to cultivate message, to then effectively apply that message, their own message of their company, of their brand, of their property that they're listing, all of these things. There's a time crunch that I'm seeing more and more, where people are doing marketing and they're doing and doing and doing, but they haven't put any thought into it because they haven't had time, because they're having to feel so reactive. My hope for 2022 is that it becomes a year of being proactive, right? It's of building a plan in advance and then executing the plan so that you can be nimble and adapt when market conditions change, like Saul is talking about. When you have a diversification ploy and you have the opportunity to find something really cool to do with your money, like, have that already planned in advance so that you can actually do it. So those are pieces that I'm seeing in marketing of really trying to encompass a plan that allows for a lot of change. And it's hard to do, but it's so important because things are getting very disorganized in marketing. And you're just probably seeing that on the posts that you're seeing on various companies of their presence. It's one hand doesn't know what the other one's doing. It's unbelievably disorganized because people are being so reactive right now.
Wow. Well, it's chaotic at best. You're going to unmute me? Reagan? Post muted your mic. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Oh, well, then it's a lie. Forgive the intrusion.
I'm glad you said it. You're in slow motion.
You're in slow motion. So the nobody knows planning better than the cybersecurity community, I would hope. Darren, and planning and having a plan was actually the advice we gave our listeners on our first episode, was to go rebuild your playbook. So that holds true 12 months later, I believe. And Darren, coming back out of your travels, what are your thoughts in 2021? What do we learn? Where are we headed, 22? What would you be doing?
Well, a couple of things. I just want to go back to something that you mentioned before, Andreas, and also Saul, about we had a conversation actually just yesterday, and we were talking about salaries keeping pace with inflation. And, a good point was made that inflation does not include energy or food. And so that's really where we're being hit today. And so, when there's this discussion about salaries keeping pace with inflation, it's not accounting for a better metric, which would be CPI, Consumer Price Index. And so what we're seeing as well in the cybersecurity market is it's going to be a lot more expensive to hire people in cybersecurity. It's going to be a lot more difficult for Silicon Valley companies to entice people to come out and live in California. I know some people, for example, who moved from New York State, thought they were going to be making a huge amount of money, which they were going to be, but they get a tiny house and the cost of living is a lot higher. And, I know we complain on the East Coast about fuel prices, but the cost of fuel prices in California is ludicrous. So I think it's going to be harder for companies to hire good cybersecurity people. And just, there's been a lot of people who've retired because with the stock market so high, people have been encouraged to cash out on their 401ks. And so it's going to be a tough market for cybersecurity companies where there's already millions of unfilled positions.
Wow. And so there isn't, and forgive me for saying this, there aren't solutions coming in to disrupt that space to take care of us, a platform, to check our systems and just do what you do, in a sense. Forgive me being blunt about
that. No. That's one of the big problems is that we bring in more and more cybersecurity tools. And when you add more and more cybersecurity tools, you get a lot more information, but you get a lot more false positives. And so, you know, companies are continually being hit by attacks on a daily basis. So I heard, you know, of one multimedia company, huge company, that was called by the FBI and said, hey, your website is being attacked. And they said, tell me something I don't already know. This happens hundreds of times every day, you know, maybe thousands of times every day. And so you still need that human perspective. You still need somebody to review these logs. And, you know, as many tools as we have, we're just producing more information for a human to go through. And, you know, the threats change over time. And the bad guys continually, it's kind of like coronavirus, right? They come out with a different strain of malware continually. And we have to keep adapting. And so our systems can't be automated for a lot of those threats, what we call zero-day attacks.
It's funny, to Saul's point about the acceleration of technology, you said something there. You have to have humans present. And AI is a hot topic I hear thrown around a lot today. And it was stated the other day by the Harvard Business Review that you can't codify common sense in AI. So despite as far as we've gotten in the different areas, deep learning and stuff, common sense containers and things, having a human to figure it out, they haven't done it. Well, it hasn't been done yet, I should rephrase that. So as much as we're accelerating all this technology, and whether it's for good or for bad, profit or not, marketing and such, or learning how to follow where the money goes, it's all, we seem to be at a point where this is it. The humans still need to be here, which is my point back to Saul. The brokers will always be here.
Well, but here's the question. To what degree? To what degree?
Well, if you're value.
So I heard something the other day, and I think it's absolutely right. Anybody who thinks that the business, that the industry they're in now is going to be the same 10 years from now is dreaming.
No.
And absolutely. Right. So it's just you can't even because it's exponential. And so there's going to be major change. And so will there be a human needed? I heard something else interesting about AI. All the big benefit of AI, it can be, it's just dumb as heck. All it's doing is doing crunching. Right. And so it's doing a lot of crunching and doesn't have to do the thinking as we think of it to give us the results that we need. And so so people are taking advantage of that. It's all going to, you know, change a lot of these different things. So what is the role of the broker going to be? What is the job description of the broker going to be? What is the employment model of the broker going to be? What is the compensation model of the real estate professional going to be? Do you really need a mortgage loan officer and a real estate salesperson in a transaction? Or can regulations be changed, or are they even maybe in the process of being changed so that you can streamline that and bring it closer together? And can you bring the secondary mortgage market maybe and the consumer together, eliminating the middle person, decentralizing, moving the bank out of the way? And so there are lots of things that are in the works right now. And like most things, most technological change, and I've been kind of watching it since I was in the Navy, and that's another story, just watching how the technology evolves. The work that's in place to make the changes 10 years from now, that work is already in place. Those things are already, you know, they're going to launch the next generation of ships tomorrow. They didn't start working on that yesterday. They started working on that 10, 15, 20 years ago. And so banking systems and everything we're seeing today, and as we see the change, it's like, wow, just change. No, it's been working. This change has been working its way through this system and maze of governance and GSEs and the lending market. And so how can somebody, whoever wants to do this, squeeze costs out of transactions? And the answer is you eliminate human hands from that. And so how many human hands touch the transaction in real estate before there's a purchase? And then after the close and the loan and the securitization and the servicing and the early payoff and all those hands and all those costs that take place, what could be eliminated by technology? And then could that bring the price down? And isn't that what the DOJ wants to do? And isn't that what the FTC wants to do? And isn't that what the White House wants to do? And yes, we can give you documentation to say that's what they want to do. And so AI is a piece of that. Now, you're still going to have brokers, I think. Is there always going to be a person to some degree? But maybe I have to add more skills to what I deliver. And personally, this happened to me back in the 80s when big companies started to get into real estate. Merrill Lynch got into real estate. Prudential Insurance Company got into real estate. Sears bought Payne Weber. And so you had all these Metropolitan Life Insurance Company bought Century 21. And so I was a real estate broker. I'm thinking, holy mackerel, you got all these securities guy people getting into the real estate business. I better do that too. And so I got securities licenses and started doing a tax preparation business. And so my real estate customers were also my property management customers, were also my tax clients, were also my securities customers, were also my insurance customers, were also my financial planning clients. And so I had this practice that I built by bringing in all these different types of financially related subjects. So I think along that same line, people who are real estate professionals are going to find there's new ways to sell property. There's new ways that property is divided up and it's fragmented and syndication is a little bit different. And the people who are the real estate brokers who succeed are the people who understand the technologies, understand the benefits to the consumer. When a consumer says, hey, have you heard about this? They don't say no. They say, yes, I've heard about this. Let me tell you all the good things about it. There's a human being is in this process. I'm just not sure of the whether or not all of the current skill sets transfer over as certain technological changes take place.
Yeah, I think with you know, one of the limitations, and I completely agree with you, our technology and AI is going to reshape a lot of what we do. But you know, in the world of cybersecurity, when somebody has your credentials, they're just recognized as a regular person. And sometimes it takes something small, like somebody realizes, hey, why was this person looking at Baidu and Chinese websites, you know, at this particular time of the day? And I know there are things that can look for unusual activity, but employees get up and they work at strange hours as well. It's very difficult for an automated tool to identify this. And sometimes it's just human perception that something doesn't seem right about how this user activity occurred with credentials that we recognize and have been used in accordance with our corporate policies. So that's where I think the human element is still really, really critical. One thing I was just going to bring up is, Andreas, I think we had mentioned Zillow at one point and automated purchases and that kind of thing. And you know, there've been issues with that, right?
Saul could talk more on this than I could, but Zillow laid off a significant amount of their workforce because their whole acquisition strategy was built on the automated valuation models they were using, I believe. And they just are now full of it. They have inventory they can't sell to buyers that I wouldn't say don't exist. From my standpoint, the first-time home buyers are priced out and everybody above them, institutional, won't pay what Zillow's offering for that inventory because it's too high. The models didn't account for this because there was a paradigm shift, as Saul likes to say in his talks. So yeah, Zillow is a big topic. We spoke a lot on Zillow, actually.
So yeah, that was the iBuyer idea, right? And so then the concept is, what is an iBuyer? It's somebody's an instant buyer, an internet buyer, an institutional buyer. And really the question is, what are people's investment objectives? People either buy and hold or buy and flip, different skill sets. My personal investment philosophy in real estate was buy and hold, right? But some people can make money buying and flipping. And so then that's become like Hollywood, and everybody thinks that they can buy and flip. And so that's one way. Now, there are people who come in and want to buy your property, and they'll pay you cash for it with the intention of flipping it. But there are also people who come in and buy your property and pay you cash with the intention of keeping it. And so Zillow, so there are different kinds of iBuyers. The model of Zillow was this flip thing. Now, we kind of talked about how ironic. Realtors have been telling the world for years, don't believe the Zestimates. They're not right. Don't believe the Zestimates. They're not right. How do I explain to my clients the Zest? Everybody believes it. Well, and so all of a sudden Zillow gets slammed. And you got to think, did they use their own Zestimates or what? And so, there are different issues. But to me, a really interesting point is, and whether this happened or not, but this is what was reported, was they laid off 25% of their workforce. 25%. I can't believe that 25% of their workforce was involved in the iBuying portion of Zillow. So if you look at their balance sheet, you look at 25%, if you really got to cut expenses because you don't have money, you got to go to the big things, right? And what is the biggest expense typically? It's the
people.
And 25% across the board is an enormous, to me, when I look at it, cut for just, but they're blaming it on this one. And it could be that they lost so much money, they had to, these other parts of their business had to suffer for it. So I think you're right, Darren. It's big news, and people are talking about it, and whatever the reason is, and could it have been an artificial intelligence quirk or how, whatever, that, the idea, we always tell people, you need to buy low and sell high, and you'll always get in trouble if you buy high and sell low. And that's what happened to them.
Well, and intuition and common sense would tell you put the brakes in a certain market. Too much has gone through. An algorithm wouldn't necessarily know that. Rapidly trading, buying in and telling them to buy. I think they just bought, it's supply and demand. They bought too much supply. They took away their own demand.
You bring up a great point. And so the phrase is, you can't trade what you can't grade. You can't trade what you can't grade. And so it's hard to grade. It's hard to value properties that way without feet on the street, without knowing neighborhoods, without knowing, right? You can't trade what you can't grade. Now, AI and accumulation of data and, making that AI better and smarter and looking is going to give more transparency, and it's going to give people who want to go in and buy in certain areas, going to give them more transparency, and they're going to be able to better grade. And if they can better grade, they'll better trade. And then also involved in real estate and the financing in real estate is, insurance on the loans. And if you can reduce some of the risks, you can reduce insurance costs on that portfolio, which gets us back to reducing costs, right? Bringing down the cost of the transaction, automating where you can. The real estate transaction, the digitization, you hear people talking about this. It's true. Now, how soon will people say, it's going to be 5 years from now? I'm of the opinion that things are going to happen faster than people believe.
Well,
reducing costs and...
Okay. Well, the interesting piece to me is that I think what we hit with Zillow and with the Zestimate is that, the algorithm was wrong. The algorithm was incorrect. And that algorithm had many, many other things that were built and layered upon it, entire programs for an algorithm that wasn't correct. So how does that happen in other industries? Are we going to see that same thing play out in multiple areas where we're building on untried, untested, and what turns out to be fundamentally untrue algorithmic behavior that... Then there's this incredible backflow of tragedy. I mean, this is not a tragedy per se, but many huge fallout from trusting an algorithm that isn't true and isn't correct. I mean, who goes in and says, oh my gosh, the algorithm's wrong? It doesn't work.
I think that the situation with Zillow is kind of an anomaly. And that things will get, you'll see better, that the whole idea behind AI is that it gets better and better and smarter and smarter. Still, there's the limitations although it depends on who you read, right? There are limitations on the degree to which, you know, whether you're looking at George Gilder or Kurzweil, right, and different perspectives about how far you can take this. But the idea that insight comes from somebody crunching it, something crunching all this information, and you're right. However, whatever happened in their ultimate process, it didn't work. Now, if you and I go in and look at a property and we say, hey, it's worth this much, that's an algorithm too, right? I mean, it's a certain, we came up with a certain process that we walked through that came up with that value. And so as that more and more mimics what humans can do, and it'll continue to move in that direction, then it'll get better and better. But as fast as it happened at Zillow, because first they came in 1 week and said they're going to slow down, and then the next week they came in and said we're going to stop it altogether. That sounds like maybe there were some other issues there, that there was some mismanagement. Yeah, the way in which their buying process, which included some type of valuation based on something, but they didn't maybe look at the whole marketplace or look at their balance sheet or, right, who knows?
Something.
Now, so they end up, it's a deal for somebody who can come in and buy a couple thousand at a time. And that's what's going to happen, right? And then this is going to be that type of iBuyer is going to come into Zillow and buy it, and is going to be the type of buyer that holds it. Right? That's what's going to happen.
Probably the insurance companies.
Those people that have long-term holding strategies.
Right. Exactly. But actually, Becca, you brought up a point before I could ask it. The one side of this table that has the most data outside of Darren is marketing. Is AI pushing in to take the place of marketers? Maybe that's what all this chaotic messaging is. Auto posting or smarter things trying to replace or augment what you do, your company does. Is that what you're saying as well?
I'm sure there are things in the pipeline. I'm not aware of anything right now that I feel is
Zillow bad, sort of Zillow oops.
Right. Like, I don't know of the marketing algorithm that's gonna wipe out my company. It is funny though, because you make a good point, because there are so many tools that we use that do streamline and really exponentially speed up areas of marketing. For instance, design, utilizing something like Canva that has literally tens of thousands of templates, and you're switching out an image and, oh, look, it's done. You know, there are tools like that that we're seeing and that we adapt to and use instead of creating everything from scratch. What is that going to mean for the future? Is somebody really just going to be able to put 3 images in Canva and tell it to make its social media feed? Probably. It's interesting to think about.
That's human. You need common sense plus creativity, which I don't think they have yet.
Well, you know what, Becky, you make a great point. You're talking about basically, you know, publishing mm-hmm. different materials, different ideas down different channels to different audiences over different periods of time, which is terribly tedious for a human being to do. But if you can just get 1 or 2 days ahead of yourself on content, then you can program this all out and all these things will happen automatically. It's provided you set the vision first, plan you were talking earlier. Right. You set the vision first, you know where you want to get to at the end of the year, you create all the messaging that happens, and then you use that particular type of tool like Canva or something that allows you to, it's really content management too, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of great tools. Boy. But then that creates the need for people that know how to use the tool.
Right, so the human element. But Darren, you were going to say AI must be pushing into your side of the space.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But I was just thinking when you were talking about real estate, you know, I was talking to an attorney who does real estate deals in the Caribbean, and somebody had done all their homework on this particular property that they wanted to buy, and the property prices in the area were really good and going up in price, and everything was perfect. And they just said to the attorney, hey, would you mind just taking a taxi down to this spot that I'm going to buy? I'm buying it, you know, sight unseen. It's COVID times. I can't get there. And anyway, it turned out that this property was like downwind of a a pig farm, which you would never really notice unless you were actually gone to this particular site and you realize that. And that's something that AI cannot fix. And, you know, to give a cybersecurity spin on that, you know, when you read about really good security people, they continually push the physical security side. And so, you know, you have people who will, you know, go to a loading dock of a building, pick up a box of Staples paper and see if they can get all the way to an office. And that's really important, because those kinds of things happen all the time. Social engineering is a huge part of cybersecurity. I was just watching on National Geographic last night about, you know, especially during COVID times, people are going on to online dating more and more, and people are being built out of tens of thousands, if not millions of dollars, sending it to people who are scamming them online. So it's, you know, never underestimate the social engineering or the human side of security and cybersecurity.
You know, Darren, you make a great point. I read a New York Times article the other day that said something like 63% of all the people who bought homes last year made at least one offer without seeing the property.
Wow. Now,
it doesn't sound like much, right? But if you think about it, that shows that there's social change taking place. When that 63%, at least one of the properties, they, you know, was a sight unseen. So it was making an offer on a property they hadn't seen. So those types of things are happening. And a lot of the shift is the demographics, right, is generational. And so we're just more, the change just piles on, right? Coming from all directions.
Well, so millennials are inheriting something like $45 trillion, generational shift. So it was funny, so when we were together on a different project, you know, I used to go out and I'd speak very highly about the 10,000 people turning 55 every day. It was about the securities business. It was about getting that money up across, about capital. Now it's a bit of a shift. It's, wait a minute, it's about the next generation, in the sense of that money and the social impact that it's going to go towards, because that they care about, the millennials. The millennial generation is socially impact-driven with a lot of money, social responsibility at their forefront, as opposed to how do I invest smarter in long-term strategies. It's all what I refer to as like now, right now. What is it doing now? What is that company doing now? What can I do with it now? So those generational shifts, those people, I think, goes unseen. And I was out buying during COVID, and I made an offer. I would walk into every property, but would make offers and have to pull them back at inspection. And I think that was because we got to a point where we were just afraid to lose the properties personally. We just needed a place. So sight on, and I would get close to sight unseen. You know, I would have started pushing those out, but I couldn't do it. My own, just my own background. There's just too much there. And luckily, we did close on something.
But so I think that's the next generation, though, or the next generation, that might not be an issue to them.
Could they not? Absolutely. Yeah. Those New York buyers bought for us, where we live in the tri-state, we were priced out 100 grand, 10, 20, 30% above our asks by New York buyers, sight unseen. Assumably. I mean, it's crazy numbers. Now they're not funding out.
So it might be long tail now, but that doesn't mean it'll be long tail forever.
It's cyclical. That's why we're in this business. Opportunities up and opportunities down for most of us. Cybersecurity just has opportunities all the time, dude. You guys make more money every year, year after year. It's the other side of the coin. But I digress there. Cybersecurity aside, we're in a cyclical world. We talked a lot about AI. We're coming up closer to the top of the hour. Making a plan was what was highlighted a lot. The human element, not relying on your systems, what is the second item I really heard. And then almost, and not a counterbalance, relying on the government's assistance or where the government's putting their attention. prioritizing that, at least in your plans. Yeah. Is that a fair summary of what you said, Saul? Take the government's doing and use it to prioritize everything else.
We know that money is going to be spent, but we're hearing words like infrastructure. Infrastructure is directly related to the value of the surrounding real estate. And so we know that there's going to be dramatic amounts of money pushed to things that can have an impact on the value of real estate. And so we should be, as a real estate professional, we should be looking for those types of things in our particular areas. And there are ways and proven ways to be involved to do these things. And we're going to see it more now than we've seen in a while. Right. So we all know that. So why not, as a real estate broker, look for the opportunities? And so there was a question about the car wash, and I'll answer this question. The guy asked, or somebody asked a question about the car wash. So we own a car wash and we own the two houses next to it. Those two houses next to it are zoned for R1, single family homes on those lots. Now, what they're built like 1906, and one's a Craftsman. And they're the two properties next to the car wash. Now, if we tore them down, all we could build is two houses. But now they change the zoning, changes completely the value of those two lots, because what if we could put 8 units because they let us go high instead? So there's more potential value. And now it even makes me look at the car wash property in the front and say, now because we got the plottage or the plottage increment, the value of all of the parcel, the car wash parcel and the two house parcels, now maybe if we could build twice as many stories, now maybe the highest and best use becomes to, at particularly at my age, 72, to sell the real estate so somebody can come in and build a whole bunch of units on that property. And why? Because the car wash is in a neighborhood that we would call a walkable neighborhood, you know, WOD, walkable oriented development. And that's kind of a big thing. And people really like walkable now, and the government likes walkable, and you don't have to, maybe they're taking away parking requirements and development because they want people to walk. And so this particular community where the car wash is like one of those types of community. That's another thing. I'd be looking for walkable communities because you're going to probably see disproportionate increases in value in walkable communities over those that are not walkable communities. So there's all kinds of opportunities and things going on.
While we're talking neighborhoods and opportunities, just to bring this up because I have to, especially with Darren on the line, $4.3 million investment into Main Street in the metaverse to buy a neighborhood, a parcel in real estate. We touched on it on our last call, and Becca pointed out, hell, you have to negotiate for your rights digitally, just like when you buy a house. And I said, yeah, that's spot on, and I like that a lot. But then I read the news in this purchase, and I'm going, how do you even purchase land? How do you insure land? Is it insurable? Is there even a planning and zoning committee for the land like it is in the real world? In the real world, I think is how they refer to it, actually. I didn't know the breadth of it. So now we've got four sides of the industry here. What is your take on this metaverse opportunity neighborhoods? Too soon? Is it too far out? Just a real quick around the room. Barry, are you going to send marketing in there? I mean, is that a thing? I think it's a thing. I'm seeing a lot of money go in there from the marketing side. Darren, is this just another avenue for being exploited and faked and perpetrated through? I don't know. So I'll start with you with the broad view, and then we'll jump into our industries. What do you think?
You know, personally, it's early, I think, for most people. And if you really, but think about NFTs, right? And think about the entertainment world and the fact that this type of technology is being utilized for things that we never before thought anybody would ever spend money on. But again, that doesn't matter because things are generational. And so there is something to it. What, I don't know. How soon, I don't know. And are there going to be ways that you need to protect it? So is there going to be something similar to real property? I don't know. I came up with, in my mind, this idea the other day. And so you heard it here first, right? Prior art, that something called a consumer data manifesto. And so this is the problem with this, right? Today is number one. So this is what people need to do. People need to know what they own. People don't know what they own. It's easy to devalue something you don't know. So people, number one, consumers, whatever type of consumer you are, you need to know what you own. Number two, You need to know your rights to what you own. And they'll be different in different states, and there are different privacy rights and so forth. But you really need to know your rights to what you own, and then know all the laws surrounding your rights to what you own. And then the fourth one is be ready to negotiate for what you own. Because you do that every single day when you go online and when you click the button that says, I'm willing to accept the cookies or whatever you're willing to do. You're negotiating your data away. So consumers need to become aware of these things. And I think maybe in this next year they will. You know, with Darren's help, we'll take the message to the world, right? Becca's marketing side. But I think this is kind of the direction, because people are not going to pay attention until we start putting those basic pieces in front of them. And so I'm looking forward to being able to do that next year. I think that's a big, big, big check on the list.
Common sense for us.
Yeah.
Not the AI.
Yeah.
The common sense and ownership. Adding that, Becca?
I actually want to hear what Darren has to say on this, because I know he only has a couple minutes. Well, I know he's got a limited amount of time, and his wisdom is always just really helpful in positioning the context.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're talking about kind of virtual worlds and that kind of thing. And yeah, so, you know, I think there's a big lesson to be learned from that recent cryptocurrency, because everybody wants to jump on the next virtual currency while it's, you know, in its infancy. They don't want to miss out like they did with Bitcoin or Ethereum or these other virtual currencies. And, you know, a lot of people got burnt with that last virtual currency, which allowed people to buy it. And it was moving up and up and up. And then, you know, everybody realized that they weren't allowed to sell it. And so that's, as to Saul's point, you know, you got to read the fine print. You got to know when you can sell these things and make a profit if you can. You know, what is the fine print? And we often don't want to be bothered with taking the time to read that.
A little too fast on a lot of consent forms. On sites they trust. So the brand behind it, and I've just clicked, and Darren, I didn't say that to you in front of me, but like I've arrived at some sites and I've just gone to click because I'm in a rush. But that click is immortalized there, at least for a long period. And I don't really, unless you're in a GDPR area and I can go back and check and redact, here in the States, I know there are a lot of changes in different states coming up or that recently passed that are similar, but you're given away your firstborn, as the saying goes. You don't even know it.
Well, there actually used to be the software that you would buy, and it came in this cling film, right? And it would say, if you break the cling film, then, you know, you've bought this, you have no way back, right? And everybody was afraid to open that package with your software, because now you're bound by an end user license agreement. And there were a couple of important court cases where the judge said, listen, honestly, nobody reads that small fine print. So too bad for you, big corporation. You know, you know, people don't read that. They can't be bound by those kinds of things. You know, people don't, if you don't break the plastic, you can't see what's inside. So, you know, a lot of court systems are, you know, have a rational approach to some of this stuff as well.
That's all coming to bear now, as we're seeing more and more litigation come up with respect to our privacy and our data, just whether or not we get away legally or rightfully, I guess I should say. And
I'm going to have to go up, sorry.
In fact, I just saw the comment. Darren, always a pleasure.
Great to see everybody.
Good to see you, Darren.
Hi, Darren.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
You as well.
So, Andreas, my perspective as it relates to the metaverse, quite frankly, is that it's, you know, there are early adopters. In any industry, in any wave of technology, there are these early adopters who get really excited about it and they move forward. And they're great. They're trailblazers. But most of the people like in my world don't fit that categorization very well. And I think commercial real estate does not tend to be an early adoptive industry. Like commercial real estate was slow to adopt, you know, Facebook or Twitter. Like I have clients that don't have any online presence. I have multiple clients that we just built their company's first website this year.
Or MLS.
Yeah. Right? Like, there's people just don't move that fast in real estate. So I tend to think that we won't be, as commercial real estate practitioners and real estate practitioners on the residential side, I don't think we're going to be defining the rules of the metaverse. But we are very good at pushing rules and understanding rules once they're established. And we may wish in hindsight that we are more part of that conversation going in. Hopefully, like our organizations that lead us are at the forefront of those conversations. NAR is unbelievably tech forward. Very impressive what they've done as an organization to be tech forward. But the vast majority of us as practitioners are going to be just cautiously following along and waiting until we can actually wrap our brains around it and really understand that metaverse before we're really getting, you know, even willing to dip our toes in. And I don't know that that's better or worse. It's just an analysis of how we behave as an industry.
Well, you bring a couple points. One is Jeffrey Moore's Crossing the Chasm, right? So you start out with the innovators, early adopters, then there's a chasm where people don't, and then there's the early majority. Then there's the late majority, then there are the laggards. So technology is typically adopted in this bell curve, right? Innovators, early adopters, early majority, late majority, laggards. And realtors are typically not, people that sell real estate, typically not on the innovator side. Some of them are, but not all of them. So you're right, I absolutely agree, right? It's kind of wait until you get pushed into it. Now, the idea about the metaverse, to me, the first application is if you, as somebody who is in the sales business, I got to go where people go. And if I can figure out where people go, and I can go where people go, and I can have things in common with them, then I can build rapport. And if I can build rapport, I can build trust. And if I can build trust, I can sell them something. And if I'm in real estate, I can sell them a lease or can do whatever. So if I find out, if I realize that just like going to cigar, I got friends, real estate brokers, commercial brokers, I go to cigar salon. Place. Why? Because people who go to cigar places have enough money to buy cigars, and they do business, and they drink brandy, and they smoke cigars. And so where you go, where people go. And so maybe an application of this, and so don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Maybe the application is if you find that there's a universe or community of people that are going there and you can fit in and you can learn, then take that on as something that you would do and meet people. And then it can be just one of those things that helps you build that relationship, go back to human beings and relationships. But use the technology to help me build the relationship. You know, in the early days, I didn't just get to talk to people. I call them on the phone, too. And then when I got shipped overseas, I'd write them letters. So I'd write them letters. I'd call them on the phone, and then I get to see them. There are different ways that we engage as human beings. And maybe the metaverse is one where that's going to – and it's too early for me. But, you know, I'm sure that's
Metabase hour is a cocktail hour or an agenda cocktail hour for networking.
Generational.
Yeah, it's a little too early for me in that respect. And Becca, good points on the market. On commercial real estate is certainly slow to adopt, and I don't think residential real estate would have been any faster, with the exception of our clients opting it so fast in that space. You know, they force it. And maybe this is the same. Who knows? We all get aligned and we're all stuck there. There's a Wall Street Journal reporter shocked herself in a room for 24 hours, and they showed the whole recording. She was in the metaverse. She did meetings. She did everything. Her whole day through the metaverse. And she took the gauze off, and she looked like she'd been through a war. I mean, she just she goes, my head is slamming. I can't handle this. So who knows? I think it is early, but it's something to be watched. Who knows? It might become that part of the skill set of value, traversing these different worlds. Because languages, with the exception of AI translating large amounts of text, languages are tricky to begin with, especially humans communicating. So we'll see. It's all for grabs. It's actually, for the first time in a long time, we're actually bugged out. What's our parting advice for our listeners this month, this year, given everything that's going on? Becca?
All right. So I have advice that I took down listening to Saul and thinking about our businesses in general, all of our businesses. And that is to remember that diversification in what we do, as in our business practices and our business lines in particular, it can help us maximize the opportunities that address this pace of change we're seeing. So the way to maximize those opportunities is to diversify what we're doing and what product type we're pursuing. So I think that to the extent that people are doing the same thing that they've been doing for years, they might be really, really hyper-concentrated in a niche. Well, look at what the government's pushing the money towards, like Saul said, and see where you can diversify. That doesn't mean you stop what you're doing. It doesn't mean that you quit what's tried and true. It means that you just add a little bit more of a diversified perspective to it. You try to do a few more things in a different area to maintain your level of success. So I thought that that could be applied to every aspect of business. So Saul, I thank you for what you said, that I was able to jot down what I thought was the perfect advice for the end of the year and going into the next.
I love it. Thank you. No, I think that there's huge opportunities, as there always are opportunities in real estate. That's why we're in the word. Most of us got attracted to the real estate business. And so I say, look for the opportunities, avoid the dissent. And so you're going to find situations where you want to prove yourself right or somebody else wrong. And when you come into those situations, I think it's really important to look for the opportunity and to be patient, avoid the dissent. There's lots of opportunities. And then always keep in your mind, you got to have the whole story, and very rarely do we have the whole story. So it's, you know, text without context is pretext. Text without context is pretext. And since we don't often have the whole story, we don't want to jump to conclusions. And if we're always looking for the opportunity, I think 2022 is going to be a great year.
Loved that. Just the sentence I will put forward here is relatively straightforward, in the sense of disappointment is inevitable, misery is optional. Right, things are going to happen. How you take them and move to the next level is up to you. How you feel about those things happening, from a personal level, from a growth level, from a year in trying to find a house as a broker without a lazy broker, no one to blame but myself. Some things are within your control, some are without. So diversification, as we've done in real estate, as we advise our clients to do in many cases around this table, to protect themselves as a sense of direction for a business, absolutely. I think that you're right. Okay, and it's all spot on. And pretest, uninformed decisions are the worst decisions. Don't rush it. So I think that's great advice for our listeners. 2022 onward, inward, everywhere. I wish Darren were here to give his two cents, but I know it would be to make sure you lock your doors. Don't post that your building naked if you're going away next week for the holidays. Keep that stuff, you know, any common sense, as it were, with your physical security. I'll fill in for Darren since he had to leave early. But that guy's, I can't say how much I enjoy these talks and how excited I am to this again with you in the new year. Any great plans for New Year's? Do you want to come here? Come to Manhattan? No?
70, Vegas, 72 degrees here in San Diego most of the time.
It's 72 degrees here in my office. Most of the time. Fair enough. Next month, we'll do this again. Looking forward to a brand new year with everyone. And as Saul pointed out, what will most likely be a tremendous year, depending on how you make the opportunities available to you or find the opportunities from the government. Thank you again. Reagan, would you like to say hello before signing off? Anything from the multimedia side of the business?
It's not necessarily multimedia specifically, but what I would say is write down your ideas, whether that's in some sort of a list form or whether that's some sort of free form journaling or anything. It's something I've been seeing come up time and time again in my business, and I've been seeing people use it effectively and really start to hone their ideas. We all have a lot of ideas, start to write them down, and then you can start to sort of, you know, carve out that piece of marble into the statue, so to speak.
Get to your 100.
Yeah.
Can't do 100 if you don't do the first one. Somewhere in between, write down difference.
Yeah. Just write down the ideas. Write down the goals. Write down the ideas. Yeah.
So that's right.
Yeah. Board,
Absolutely. You know the whole thing, you can't hit the target if you don't know where you're shooting.
I'm going to hold up an Apple Pixel. I'm
doing
it now.
No, fuck.
Yeah.
That's Snoopy, right? That's
I like Snoopy today.
Analog.
All right, guys.
Yeah.
I love it. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Good to see you.
Where can everybody find you? Is it Data Advocate or was you at Real Time?
You can go to dataadvocate.com.
Dataadvocate.com. Love it. And Becca, where can they find you? How do they find you?
CarlsonIntegrated.com.
Love it. And those looking for me, looking to talk tech, or better yet, looking for portability of your data, transfer data, go to Craigo.ai. You can always reach out to me on Twitter, Andreas Devseni. For those that don't know and are in the not-profit space, if you're looking to raise money more efficiently, reach out to me too. We've got some surprises for you coming in the year. Right, guys?
How do people get all the rig in?
Just, they could watch the show.
That's right. Just DM me.
Do you have a website up?
I don't have a website up. I've been telling everyone the same thing for the past 2 years, which is every time I get a little break so I can start to take care of that stuff, my phone rings. So it's a good problem to have.
Write down the ideas.
Yeah, I am. Believe me. I practice what I preach.
Get you set up on Canva.
Clearly it's what I need. I need someone to AI some of my design for me. That's what I need.
Hey, you better be careful. PowerPoint is trying. You know, yeah. It makes these suggestions down for you all the time. You're teaching it every time you stick that suggestion. Which one you like. That's what it's doing.
I mean, it's not listen, as long as we use it effectively, it's not the worst thing in the world. You know, it's always going to come down to how we use it, I think.
Fair point. With that, have a good 2022, everyone. Look forward to seeing everyone in January. Have fun in Vegas.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.